The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen, remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined today by Denny Carter, where we will be talking. I really need to change that wording. I always say where we will be talking, and I can barely say it. It's a huge mouthful.
I think it works conversationally.
You think it works? Well, we will be talking. We'll be taking a spin, Den, through the latest NFL news, including the unfortunate situation in Washington's backfield, the strange situation in San Francisco quarterback room, and the annoying situation in Baltimore's running back group. We will also discuss the players we are leaving every draft with and some picks that might work in any scoring format via a three-week-old article from Denny that we forgot to talk about. When's it from?
It's from March.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right, that'll still be very evergreen and timely. But first, Denny, you've got a bug in your bonnet. A bee in your bonnet? About the way a certain highlight was interpreted over the weekend, and I want you to share your thoughts.
All right, so you know, if you're chronically online, like me, then you will have seen the preseason highlight of Tua throwing a deep downfield throw and completing it to Tyreek Hill for a 53-yard gain. This was greeted almost unanimously with negativity. People saw this 53-yard completion and said, hey, look, that's bad. 53-yard completion, it's not good. And I think this is because it wasn't thrown over the top. It was not flown 65 to 70 yards downfield over Tyreek's shoulder so he could catch it on the dead run and then walk into the end zone for a touchdown. And it drove me insane. And actually, it's radicalizing me to become part of the group known as Tuanon.
Oh my gosh. So that wasn't you to begin with. We kind of all just assumed you were behind that account.
No. Listen, I am and was a Tua skeptic, but this negativity and skepticism has run amok. It's gone too far. The guy completes a 53-yard pass to the fastest guy in the entire league, maybe in league history. And the reaction is, oh, that sucked. Well, you hate to see that.
Did Tua ever consider it actually being a good play would be my response. Because if you're on an NFL roster as a quarterback, you need to be able to hit a 53-yard pass in stride. I mean, Cooper Rush could do that, who was cut by the Cowboys right on Tuesday. Will Greer, also cut by the Cowboys on Tuesday. He could do that. Has he ever considered hitting him in 59 yards in stride where it would have become an 80-yard touchdown?
He should think about that, too, if you're listening. Think about throwing it further than you can. People have gotten spoiled. So my point is, people have gotten spoiled because they've seen Josh Allen, because they've seen Mahomes and Herbert.
Jay Herbs.
Launch these unbelievable passes, these freakish passes that travel 65 yards in the air and sometimes are not even arced, you know, that it's just on a rope, right? It's amazing and it's special, but people see that and they go, well, okay, that's what a quarterback can do. Any quarterback can do that, I guess, right? No, these guys are special and Tua is not in that class, and completing a 53-yard pass to his deep threat is actually good, I say.
Well, you just confirmed he's not special, and if you're not special, you're not anything. you're not good at all.
Okay. Yeah, right. No, I hear what you're saying. So, you know, the criticism of Tua, Tom Brady, his arm has really strengthened over the past 5 years somehow.
Regeneroned.
Yes. He could not complete the passes that are required for Tyreek Hill to catch it in stride downfield. He couldn't do it. Okay. He cannot do it right now. And yet he is universally considered very good. And
very
he
curious. Very curious.
And it's curious. That's curious to me. The fact that Tom Brady can get away with it. But if Tua doesn't throw a 70-yard pass in stride to Tyreek Hill, then he's a bust. I'm becoming rad. I don't like it. But I have to take this stance if people will continue to put these unreasonable expectations on Tua.
Sounds like you think people have Tua derangement syndrome is what you're really saying. Because, man, I've never seen someone get in more trouble for highlights.
Yeah.
The Dolphins infamously tweeted his very arching camp throw or a lot of loft under it. And we're even like Tua basically like adding them like the best time to delete this was 1 second ago. And the one from the game wasn't nearly as bad, and it wasn't live game action. But I unfortunately agree with the haters. It was a bad play. And
oh,
that's
come
on. Word on that. That's the final word.
Wow. Oh, my God. You're going to make me become a QAnon member.
You already, first off, we already know you run the QAnon count anyway. So please don't pretend like it's not you.
All right.
And if the listeners don't know what the QAnon count is, you really need to check it out. It's one of the best accounts going on Twitter. Denny, last week we began the podcast by talking about Antonio Gibson losing ground in the Commanders' backfield. This week we're beginning by discussing the fallout from the crazy story, the shooting of rookie teammate Brian Robinson. Thankfully, Robinson is already out of surgery. He's out of the hospital. The team is saying he could even play this year. So, I mean, clearly a humongous setback, but doesn't seem to be like a career derailer for Brian Robinson. Very good news. But in the meantime, we have a back in Gibson who the coaching staff is just like clearly out on. Like they're making him the kick returner. But now he's again lacking compelling early down competition. Should, with Brian Robinson, you know, probably out at least several months, should we revert Antonio Gibson to the RB2 ranks simply because his rookie teammate is out? Or should we pay more attention to the fact that the Commanders are looking for every possible avenue to reduce Gibson's workload and still remain out on him in our home league redrafts this weekend?
It is a tough situation to decipher exactly. I know that Brian Robinson was put on the 53-player roster for Washington on Tuesday morning, so he was not put on the PUP list.
Well, he couldn't be put on the PUP list. He could still be added to injured reserve after the rosters are finalized.
Gotcha.
Which I think will probably happen, but I'm actually just guessing and haven't seen anything to that effect.
Right. So, yeah, I think you can draft Antonio Gibson as a short-term RB2-ish kind of guy. I don't know if his ADP will rise all that dramatically, considering the offense in general, the Washington offense, we're not exactly chasing production from that offense, and B, the coach's comments, and then C, his performance in training camp in the preseason. He played with the second and third stringers in parts of the preseason. Really, really discouraging kind of usage that you really don't want to see if you're taking a shot on a guy. I've seen him go in the eighth round of 12-team leagues, and you know, I think that he's a roster dependent player. We'll talk in a bit about roster independent players. I think Gibson is definitely a roster dependent player. If you are, you know, like I do mostly, if you're fading running backs early on,
never Gibson, drafted a running back.
Gibson makes for, I think, a reasonable target in the eighth round. Yeah.
So you're not talking about an RB2 there, though, then, where I've definitely have kept his rank just kind of like in the mid range flex, because I just think when a coaching staff is this determined to curtail your workload, they're going to find ways to do it. And I mean, it could be like the classic case where someone like not even on the roster, like we don't even know like their name, will be getting week one carries, like that kind of thing, where they just seem out on Antonio Gibson, especially as like an early down running back. And you know, he's had chronic injuries in his career. He had a chronic toe issue. He had a chronic shin issue. Has not been efficient as a runner. Hasn't been nearly as finished of a product as a pass catcher as we were hoping. We know they have a demonstrated commitment to J.D. McKissic, who they moved heaven and earth to re-sign this offseason. He could see a bigger than expected workload. I mean, he could end up with, what, 8 carries a week or something like that.
Sure.
And Brian Robinson, again, no one has said he's going to be out for the entire season. So it just doesn't really feel like anything changed. I think the only thing that changed is now Gibson is like clearly like a top 36 back again, where like you have to like take a flex shot on him, basically. So, I just feel like nothing has really changed that much with Gibson. Just the team just is not into Antonio Gibson.
They will have to use him. I mean, Jonathan Williams is the only other back on the Washington depth chart at the moment, outside of Robinson. Speaking of Robinson, I think you would agree that Robinson should still be drafted in 12-team formats as a bench stash.
It's tough to say. I actually would say no.
No?
Yeah, I mean, maybe if it's like a hyper-competitive league where like everyone's super dialed in and people just don't come across the wire. But I mean, if like your standard home league, I mean, what would be the real upside to stay? I would rather just have that roster spot reserved for like week 2 or 3 waiver ads. Mm. And I think if you draft Brian Robinson – unless, like, in the next week we get word, like, he'll be back in September or something. I think if you draft Brian Robinson, he's just, like, waiting to be dropped, essentially.
There is no timeline. And it could be – there's so many positive reports over the past 48 hours that I have a hard time buying into the prospect of it being, you know, 2 or 3 months until he gets on the field. Now, it still could be. I'm not a doctor, as you know. But I tend to be a little more optimistic about his return date, and man, the coaching staff loves that guy.
Yeah, it has kind of been a classic, like, no news is good news. Like, well, and the news we've gotten is that he's released from the hospital. Like, if you can get released from the hospital like a day after getting shot, that's probably a pretty good sign. So, but yeah, and it's like your standard 10 to 12 team home league.
Oh, 10 team, no.
Well, not definitely not 10 team, but even like 12 team. I just feel like you'd be like, why did I do this? Like, I need this roster spot already in week 2 to add somebody. But if it's 12, like, pretty competitive guys and gals, then yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe you could do it. I can't even, what is the upside though? Cause like, even when he comes back, it's not like he's going to come back and they're going to give Brian Robinson 15 carries right off the bat, probably, you know?
I think you're right in mentioning J.D. McKissic in the discourse here, because it's someone who is just completely ignored in all of this calculating about who's going to get touches in the Washington backfield and when they're going to get it between the 20s at the goal line, short yardage, passing situation. And McKissick's just there. He's just there. The team wants him there.
Yeah.
They're not really into Gibson anymore. They're way into Robinson. But McKissic, and PPR only, you know, obviously if you're a standard, even half PPR, McKissic doesn't have a whole lot of appeal. But in PPR, he could just kind of be a little bit of a cheat code, you know, catches 4 passes, gets 8 carries. Yeah, there you go. You got your 14 points.
You like people that have like this clearly defined roles. Something I was struggling with in the rankings, would you rather draft J.D. McKissic or Michael Carter?
Michael Carter.
See, to me, like, Michael Carter's upside, I feel like, is getting J.D. McKissic's role, though.
Michael Carter's upside is being the primary back for the
Jets. I guess so. I guess he has more early down upside still than J.D. McKissic. But I feel like what we're really, like, with Michael Carter, what we're hoping for is the role that already exists with J.D. McKissic is kind of how I look at that one.
I mean, you're not completely off base. I think Michael Carter could be really good. I know he's undersized and everything. I know Breece Hall compares favorably to guys like Ezekiel Elliott. I know that. I still think that Michael Carter, it's going to be hard to keep him off the field. I like him a lot.
He's a really interesting one. I will admit that. In San Francisco, the long, strange Jimmy Garoppolo trip somehow keeps rolling after the 49ers surprisingly retained him with the restructured contract, one that makes him both the highest paid backup in the league and more difficult to trade from a team perspective, but still quite tradable from a contract perspective. And he has a no trade clause, but all that really means is it gives Jimmy G control over where he will go. Just, do you think this move is more about the 49ers just like protecting themselves and realizing they reached the NFC Championship game last year and knowing like if you're like a championship caliber roster, you need to have a good backup quarterback. So AKA, it's not about Trey Lance. Or do you think keeping Jimmy G is about a lack of faith in Trey Lance? And like the 49ers, I was tweeting a bunch about this yesterday, so sorry if you're rereading my tweets via podcast listeners. But like they've never been able to keep their Trey Lance narrative straight. There's never been that drumbeat of positivity on Trey Lance from the 49ers. And so do you think this is more just about the 49ers wanting to cover all their bases or more about a lack of faith in Trey Lance?
So Adam Schefter said back in March that the 49ers, and this is, you know, correct, they are a win now team. They have a win now roster. They could have, by many accounts, one of the, you know, elite defenses if everybody stays healthy, especially on that defensive line. They have an elite defense. Their special teams is supposedly improving over last year's disaster, and their offense is fine. Like it's a fine offense. It got to the Super Bowl against the Chiefs, what, 3 years ago. It has competed, even though it's very conservative and kind of a little bit backwards looking. It's a win now roster, and
a playmaker based offense. They got guys who can make plays.
So they need a facilitator at quarterback, right?
Yes, yes.
And if Trey Lance cannot properly facilitate the playmakers, Debo Samuel, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, others, Mitchell, whatever, Kyle Shanahan is going to pull the ripcord. I promise you that. Like Jimmy Garoppolo is not just going to sit in street clothes on the sideline if Trey Lance is struggling. I'm not saying that the first time Trey Lance overthrows Brandon Ayuk on the sideline that it's game over for Lance. I am saying that a game or two of consistent struggles, of errant throws, of bad decision making, and I don't see any scenario where Trey Lance can just keep his job unquestioned. The media pressure will be on both locally and nationally for, again, a win now very good roster that has gotten very far with Jimmy Garoppolo under center. It makes me very nervous about Trey Lance in redraft, although his ADP is not exactly, you know, too difficult to overcome. I mean, he's ninth, 10th, 11th round pick somewhere.
Yeah, I do feel like if you're drafting Trey Lance, you should be drafting two quarterbacks. You said use the phrase pull the ripcord. That's most difficult to do at quarterback, but I mean, Kyle Shanahan does it all the time at running back, all the time at wide receiver. I mean, he probably does it all the time on defense, but we don't really pay attention to that kind of thing. But
never heard of a defense.
Never heard of defense. And he always does it, though. Even like his favorites, like guys he trades up for, like Dante Pettis, Trey Sermon. He just wants to play the best players. And yeah, I have a lot of Trey Lance thoughts. So, you know, one is like the crazy stat shared by NBC Sports Bay Area's Matt Maiocco was the first one to point out the stat. Trey Lance, not counting the preseason, has attempted 389 live passes since he was in high school.
Oh, that's like the craziest.
Like a staggering statistic, like a legitimately staggering statistic. I mean, that's like half a season total for some NFL starters. I mean, that a little more than half, but just crazy, like so raw. And I don't understand why, when you have a player like Trey Lance, like the preseason, either use it or lose it. Like, why even have the preseason if you're not going to like play Trey Lance for an entire game? Like, why was Trey Lance just not playing three full games this summer? Like, I actually mean this as a sincere point.
Mm-hmm.
Or like give him all the live game reps he needs to get his timing down, even if it's against second and third stringers. Like, what's the worst case scenario? Like, oh no, Trey Lance grew his confidence. That's right. Bad.
Right.
He's like, you're like, oh, it's against third string.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he could destroy his confidence. Well, that would have been bad. But
if that was the case, then so be it. Like, you got to know.
Yeah, it's true. If this is like all about timing and accuracy, why was he was given like so few live reps this summer?
Right.
I mean, I guess he got a lot of live reps against a really good 49ers defense in practice. But I just don't know, like, if we're reading too much into the 49ers' words or lack of words on Trey Lance. But, you know, I've been blurbing at NBC now since 2011. So I've read, you know, probably literally millions of blurbs. You get used to, like, there are just certain rhythms. And, like, a lot of them are pure, like, smoke, like pure BS. But when there's a young quarterback, there's this always an off-season drumbeat of praise from, like, the coaching staff. You know, even like the local media always gets in on the game because they always like want the guys to succeed. And it's just been like totally absent on Trey Lance.
It has.
It's just on the record, off the record, it's just been totally absent.
Kyle Shanahan went on a podcast like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and Trey Lance came up and Kyle Shanahan sort of started laughing and said, man, I'm looking forward to not having to deal with the questions this year. And the podcast host said,
I have some questions.
He said, why did you not hold a presser like announcing Trey Lance as the quarterback? And Kyle Shanahan, you know, he's flummoxed. He goes, I didn't know I had to do that. Man, that's to me, that's very fishy. That's very fishy. Like, it's basically, I tweeted a few weeks ago that it was half a joke, but only half a joke, where when a reporter says, you know, what about Trey Lance? Is he your starter? And Kyle Shanahan's response is, yes, Trey Lance is a quarterback on our roster. You know, that's sort of the response that he gives. I truly don't believe that he has a safe job there in San Francisco.
I don't either. And I got like a lot of pushback on Twitter. It's like, well, it makes so much sense. It makes business sense, which it did in theory. Supposedly he couldn't have been traded, you know, because of his shoulder, which, I mean, there have been rehabbing players traded many yes. times. Body parts heal. I bet there was someone willing to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo. And even if it makes business sense, even if in theory it makes 53-man roster sense, it does not make psychological sense. And there's a reason teams – it's like basically leaving like a loaded gun laying around. There's a reason teams with these young quarterbacks don't keep people like Jimmy Garoppolo in the quarterback room, because it makes it just like a really pressurized situation. And there's a reason it doesn't happen, and I think there's a reason the 49ers are bucking the trend, and it's because they lack the appropriate faith in Trey Lance.
That's a very, very well said. And, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo has not been part of team activities all summer, okay? Like, he has not.
Which, again, hence to, again, yeah, I don't know why it's cut you off, but talk about fishy. Like, yeah. They thought he was going to be gone.
So he hasn't participated in any practices, no film study. He hasn't been in the quarterback room. He's been part of the team, but not of the team, right? And now he is. Now it's suddenly he's sitting shoulder to shoulder with Trey Lance watching game film. I'm not saying by all accounts the relationship between Lance and Garoppolo is fine. You know, there's nothing really. It's not Rodgers and Favre or anything. But it is a situation where, I mean, the pressure on Lance ratcheted up by, you know, 100 times, by a factor of 100 with Garoppolo coming back.
Yeah, like seriously, like 1,000 fold. And it is almost like, too, like after they watch the guy play for an entire summer, yes. Trey Lance, there, it's like, we should actually think twice about this. And we could be disastrously wrong, I guess, because Kyle Shanahan is not exactly known for following the narrative. So, Trey Lance, he'll just come out and he'll just be like the best dual threat rookie since like Robert Griffin or something,
perhaps.
And he's not a rookie, excuse me, sophomore, but yeah, it's just very, very fishy. Very, very fishy. We'll be right back after this.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben and Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef, and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prep for your draft with the latest player rankings, projections, and more in the NBC Sports Edge Fantasy Football Draft Guide. It's powered by RotoWorld, the premier source for player news and fantasy information. Take advantage of our preseason special and get the draft guide for $5 when you use promo code DRAFTGUIDE at checkout on NBCSportsEdge.com/draftguide. Again, that's promo code DRAFTGUIDE for the $5 ahead of this weekend's major draft weekend. Denny, The notable cuts were few this week. I say as we're podcasting in the middle of cutdown afternoon, and
right.
we get off. Wow, they cut Aaron Rodgers finally.
What do you know?
There were few this week, but Sony Michel's release from the Dolphins, I thought merited a mention because in theory this could shore up Chase Edmonds's like role, like somewhere in say the RB 20 to 30 range. I feel like his ranks and ADP have kind of been all over the map. Does Sony Michel and like the potential goal line role he was going to have disappearing make us feel better about Chase Edmonds? Or does it even really change anything for Chase Edmonds where it could still be like a three back backfield?
I don't know if it'll be a three back backfield, but I think it changes things at least slightly for Raheem Mostert. I know Mostert.
Definitely for Mostert.
Yeah, Mostert has been hurt, you know, for what, like the past 5 years? Like,
yeah, it's been constantly crazy. Basically hurt nonstop since the 2019-20 NFC Championship game.
It's really hard to put your faith in a guy, you know, of a running back of an advanced age entering a new team, not a new system. He knows the system. You know, so it might give him, you know, some fantasy relevance. But I think Chase Edmonds had a role locked in, you know, from the start as, you know, as obviously the passing down back for, you know, a quarterback, like we mentioned, who may be checking down quite a bit in a system that requires facilitation. Okay. Like Tua can do that. Okay. I'm part of Tua, and I know, but they recently accepted me just as we were talking, but I think wow, Edmonds okay. can fit that mold. I think that, you know, Michelle leaving, it doesn't really affect that too much.
So Denny's been accepted to the Tuanon Facebook group. It's a real big day.
It is. I just got the notification. I'm very excited.
It gets banned.
My wife has left me.
So you mentioned Chase Edmonds having a role locked in, which was very true. But I think it was kind of like the same role he had in Arizona, where he's mostly getting the ball between the 20s. But he's not getting like the important short yardage carries.
Yeah.
Sony Michel was definitely the biggest threat there. I think it does kind of raise this floor and definitely ceiling a little bit. But do we think Chase Edmonds is the goal line back? I mean, because Raheem Mostert doesn't really profile as a goal line back. Like someone like want to avoid those kind of like really rugged carries with for like health reasons. But I mean, it's not Myles Gaskin, right? I mean, I guess, does it have to be Chase Edmonds is the goal line back now? Or is there, I mean, gosh.
Well,
the fullback, I mean, they have Alec Ingold.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yes. Well, yeah, right. So this Shanahanian system probably does in this kind of situation lean on the fullback in those situations. I think we are going to see that. But you know,
still Chase have Salvin Ahmed, by the way.
Salvin Ahmed, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think any of those guys profile as like locked in goal line types. But if you're drafting Chase Edmonds in whatever, what is he going in, 7th round, 12 team leagues?
Something like that, yeah.
So, you know, dead zone-ish kind of guy. I don't know if you're taking him like thinking, okay, well, he has a shot to get goal line touches. Like I never really consider that. I thought it's
no, I'm saying like, I never considered that either. I'm saying now, like, are we forced to consider that he actually
might? I mean, that'd be awesome. That'd be great. I mean, for you know, obviously his fantasy prospects, but he's a big play guy, lots of yards before contact, pretty good after contact. So you know, he could rip those off. Mostert is also a big guy. I would say Mostert is probably going to see more goal line touches or green zone touches than Edmonds.
Maybe more green zone. I wouldn't say goal line because I just feel like that's the kind of area of the field you want to avoid work for Raheem Mostert, for a guy who can't stay healthy. And a guy who's like most special in space, like kind of like why waste his bullets, so to speak, in those situations where the entire defense gets to pound on you at the 2-yard line.
So part of the reason I'm bullish on Tyreek Hill, and I know that's not exactly the bravest stance, but I think that there is an argument against Tyreek Hill at his ADP. Part of the reason is I think that they will force feed him the ball. They will design touches both in the passing game and as a runner. I mean, I don't see him lining up behind Tua and taking carries, you know, off left guard, but you know, getting him on jet sweeps, getting him the ball, getting the ball in his hands where it counts the most, which is near the end zone. So maybe this just, you know, speaks to that developing even more.
Sounds like you don't believe in Tua. You don't think they're going to line up Tyreek Hill behind him.
Tua could be the goal line back. That's what I said.
Tua. I wouldn't be shocked, honestly, if it was something dumb like Salvon Ahmed being the goal line. It won't be Miles Gaskin.
No, I don't think so. Ingold is... that's a good guess.
Wish I hadn't said that.
No. That's fantastic. Like, he fits. They love him. They love him. One of the first things they did was get this guy.
It's true. So if I feel slightly better about Chase Edmonds, we probably feel worse about J.K. Dobbins, ?
Yes.
After the Ravens pounced on Kenyon Drake, another notable release. You know, although Drake's not going to challenge Dobbins on early downs, he's a clear and present danger in the passing game. I mean, could see early. I mean, we talk about the 49ers being weird with their quarterback situation. We haven't gotten like any indications from the Ravens about J.K. Dobbins and like that he's going to be cut loose. And it seems like he'll be active for week one, but even that hasn't like been totally guaranteed. Is Dobbins, who's been generally going like that RB 18 to 22 range, yeah, is he still a safe RB2 for the final? Could this maybe create a situation, a climate of fear, or like he becomes like a huge value, like he's still an RB2 but falls to RB? Like, what is your take on J.K. Dobbins heading into the final draft weekend?
I think people should be fairly fearful of J.K. Dobbins at ADP, of course. You know, everybody's a value at some point. So if Dobbins, upon this Drake news, if Dobbins tumbles to like RB 25 or something, I think, you know, you go ahead, because would you say you're going at RB 18 to 20, somewhere in there?
Yeah, it's usually in like the RB 18 to 22 range.
So he gets to 25, 27, somewhere in there. I think that, I'd be interested there. Now, I looked up, I did the Kenyon Drake blurb when he signed with Baltimore today, and here are some.
You just dated the podcast.
What did you say?
You said you just dated the podcast and you said you did a Kenyon Drake blurb today. It was just a horrible joke. So. Yeah.
I would never
interrupt your train of thought. I've never done that before.
I would never date the podcast. Drake in 2021 was a productive pass catcher for the Raiders, catching 30 of his 40 targets for 291 yards and a touchdown. He had the sixth highest yards per route run among running backs. His 2 yards before contact per carry ranked 20th among running backs in 2021. In other words, before his ankle injury, Kenyon Drake really wasn't bad. Devontae Freeman was a top 12 running back, as Matthew Berry pointed out on a recent Fantasy Football Happy Hour, that Devontae Freeman was an RB1 in 12 team leagues for a little bit in this Baltimore offense. I think Kenyon Drake can be the same, depending on J.K. Dobbins' availability and health.
I will say with Dobbins, kind of what you said with Chase Edmonds, we never really assumed a goal line role for Chase Edmonds. Did we ever really assume a third down role for J.K. Dobbins? I guess we kind of did.
I think so. I mean, I know they have Tyler Beatty. I know Mike Davis is an excellent pass catcher, at least has been in previous seasons. So maybe that was a little presumptuous. I thought that Dobbins had a decent shot to get that work. But I spend a lot of time talking about pass catching running backs in offenses that don't throw it to the running back. You know, like Lamar Jackson doesn't really throw it to the running back. I think I wrote a piece on that this offseason. Josh Allen doesn't throw it to the running back, and yet all we do, just generally in the fantasy community, is talk about who's going to catch the passes. Is it Singletary? Is it James Cook? Who cares? They don't not get involved. No one's getting the ball there.
It could be maybe because they've just never had a good pass catching back. And maybe that's why the Bills were on the warpath trying to find a third down back. The Ravens have never had a good third down back. I mean, Justice Hill, the Zoomers won't remember. He didn't pan out. Tyler Beatty, the Zoomers probably also won't remember. It doesn't seem like he's panning out. So maybe it's just some of that, but it's also part of the offense.
I'm trying to turn off my analytics brain, turn off my spreadsheet socialism, as Evan Silva would say, and try to zoom out and just picture Lamar Jackson, you know, on a, what is it, design screen passes to
running backs
coming out? No, that's not happening. Like, he's taking the easy route. Let's see, I'm the fastest guy in the field. I'm going to sprint for 7 yards and a first down. I'll do that.
Yeah, that's an avenue available to Josh Allen and to Lamar Jackson, and not, it is true. And there is something to that narrative. And there'll be something to this segment when we are back after this. Don't forget to check out Matthew Berry's new show, The Fantasy Football Happy Hour. The legendary fantasy football analyst is back with NBC and RotoWorld. doing what he does best, discussing which sleepers to draft, rolling out his love-hate list, breaking down who to start and sit, and much, much more. There'll also be so much actionable information along the way for you sports bettors as well. Check it out weekdays at noon on Peacock, or listen to the show in podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. Now, Denny, contrary to popular belief, do you actually do draft sometimes?
I do.
You have some teams, you draft fantasy football teams. Yeah, so that'd be a good idea to talk about some of the players. Where the only hook, it's not like ADP, it's not about values or sleepers. It's just three players we find ourselves leaving our drafts with a lot. And I want you to go first. Who is someone you find yourself leaving almost every draft with?
I take very little pleasure in saying this, but Justin Fields. I leave a lot of drafts with Justin Fields because
Interesting one, actually.
Yeah, he strikes me as the last chance to get a Konami code dual threat.
Absolutely.
Quarterback who can be fine for fantasy. And even good for fantasy, even in weeks where, you know, he completes less than half of his passes for 150 yards and no touchdowns, he could still score 20 points because, again, like Lamar Jackson, he is the fastest guy on the field and can make plays. And the hope is that the new Chicago offensive staff will design the offense around his ability to scramble and run. And, you know, it's not exactly a high leverage part of the draft either. You know, you're talking about double digit rounds. So I end up with a lot of Fields.
Yeah, Fields he's the last refuge of the Konami code scoundrels, basically.
Yes, that's right.
He's like the last, he's the last really plausible one where you'd much rather have Justin Fields than Daniel Jones, who's getting some of that dual threat shine. You'd much rather than Zach Wilson, who had one good run, like now has a knee injury. I'd rather have Justin Fields. Yeah. Then he just makes a lot of sense. Like that QB 16 to 18 range. You could make an argument that we should be drafting him instead of Trey Lance, like on that QB 1-2 borderline.
Yeah.
He had a very good game. Speaking of like playing a lot in the preseason, like building your confidence, he played into the second half on Saturday and had like a massive, maybe it's just the whole first half, and posted a mammoth stat line.
Yeah.
Justin Fields, like 14 of 16, like 180 yards, three touchdowns. Should this be and we hope his coaching staff is at least no longer actively conspiring against him.
Yes, right.
And he's not been getting, I feel like, nearly the amount of buzz he should be getting for his skill set.
I think that 1,000 yards rushing is within the range of outcomes.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
And a Chicago offense that they won't have any other choice. I don't see any other choice. If they're going to move the ball, it has to be through him. He's their best player by far.
Well, there's only been three, I think, 1,000-yard quarterback rushing seasons in NFL history.
Make it four.
Maybe that's, but like, it was so weird that he did not have designed runs last year. Just straight up malpractice. And I did forget, I think he had 420 rushing yards in only 12 games last year. Just so like 800, I say 1,000's a stretch, but 700 to 800 actually could be in play.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll check up on that stat.
Should we be drafting Justin Fields or Trey Lance? Just like straight up, like forget ADP and all
I mean, I'd still straight up. I'd still rather have Lance. I mean,
I think you have to.
He's surrounded by a great offense. I'm way into Lance. One more thing about Fields. Sharp Football Analysis has a great strength of schedule measurement, and the Bears have the fourth easiest schedule per that analysis, and so I think they will have some soft matchups. The Bears defense is not going to be very good, so you could have a high volume of offensive snaps. I think it could work out for Fields.
So Denny, now I have to say a player, and
yes,
kind of really don't want to, because it's DJ Moore. Taking a lot of DJ Moore for, I believe, the third straight season.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely sure. Help me construct the case, but thankfully not usually as my wide receiver one, but like hammering DJ Moore basically as my second wide receiver in like the third round, maybe in some home leagues, he'll even fall like the fourth round. I've just been absolutely hammering him in like the third round as my second wide receiver. Cause it's as sad as it is. I mean, Baker Mayfield is the best quarterback he's ever going to play with. I just think, I viewed him as like the next Stefon Diggs for 2 years now. And I just don't think any of that has gone away, where he's a guy who can just dominate and compile underneath but also make explosive plays down the field. It's not the target competition is not good. Like Christian McCaffrey, well, it was going to command a million targets if he stays healthy, but I feel like it's like good target competition for DJ Moore because of how much defensive attention Christian McCaffrey will occupy as a pass catcher, like that frees up space for DJ Moore to operate. And I just like, it's a much weirder year than normal to a receiver where I don't think receiver is nearly as deep with sure things as it is some years. And he's going in like the Deontay Johnson, Terry McLaurin, Jalen Waddle, Mike Williams, DK Metcalf zone. And I just think he's almost like 1,200 yards in his sleep at DJ Moore. He's not going to keep scoring four touchdowns the rest of his life. And I just love DJ Moore as my wide receiver too. There I said. Yeah.
So last year, catching passes from Sam Darnold, who was miserable on every level, and a dead-armed Cam Newton, DJ Moore was 16th among receivers in yards per route run and 5th in targets per route run. I mean,
that's actually insane.
He has proven time and again as a guy who gets open, commands targets, and does a lot with those targets when he gets them, like efficient and gets open. His metrics are off the charts every year. I'm with you. I mean, I think those receivers you just listed, DK Metcalf and well, maybe not Sutton, but I do really like Moore. And you know, I would describe him as a roster independent sort of pick because he can easily be your wide receiver two. And if he goes zero RB, he can be your wide receiver three, which is pretty cool.
And I just think he's just like a classic making the leap candidate still. Would anyone really be surprised to be finished as a wide receiver one?
No, I wouldn't.
So God help me.
Yeah.
Still all in on DJ Moore. Denny, who are you all in on? Who is the second player you cannot stop drafting?
Tyreek Hill. I mentioned him a minute ago. And him going after Debo is curious to me because Debo, everything broke right for Debo last year. I think that if Brandon Ayuk truly is ascending, like reports say he is, and so here's what happened with Ayuk, just real quick. I'm going to get back to Hill in a second. With Ayuk, comes in 2020, has no training camp, has a really good rookie season because of the target volume he gets in the second half with everybody hurt, right? So he thinks, okay, well, this is how you do it. You don't need to prepare. He comes into 2021, not prepared. The coaching staff sees it. He's in the doghouse. He eventually gets back in shape, gets his mind right, gets into the game, and excels once that happens, right? So now he knows. Now he knows how to prepare, how to be a professional football player. So now I think that he can continue that. I think that there are a lot of scenarios where Brandon Ayuk is the wide receiver one in San Francisco. And so Debo's ADP, I think, is really inflated with the assumption that Ayuk is going to be what he was last year. And I don't think that's correct. So you have Tyreek Hill in an offense that I think is going to jam him targets. Okay. He is still the fastest, to me, most potent force in the entire league. Okay. Like his speed is unstoppable. And I think that Mike McDaniel is a smart coach who's going to say, hey, he's our best player. He's our best chance to gain yards and score points. Let's get him the ball. I know Jalen Waddle's there and I know Jalen Waddle had a breakout rookie year. I get that. And maybe Waddle can do fine too. I'm not discounting that, but man, the fact when you combine the talent of Hill with the fact that he is going to get a ton of touches, I just love it.
Now I have like almost too many thoughts because like we're yo-yoing between the 49ers and Dolphins. But so you say now Brandon Ayuk knows how to be a professional. I will also say now the 49ers coaching staff knows what Debo Samuel is truly capable of. And like that genie like doesn't go back in the bottle, basically. And like we talk about like the ascending Brandon Ayuk, he was like top 10 or 12 almost in yards in the second half of last season. And that still didn't really dent Debo Samuel. And we now know we could be getting a passing downgrade with Trey Lance, but you talk about a smart coaching staff in Miami. We just assume they're smart because they're Shanny disciples. We don't actually know if they're smart or not. Whereas we do know Shanny is smart. And I just can't see Shanny like backing off the Debo commitment, who just like makes plays in like more ways than almost anyone else in the NFL. So I'm not too worried about Debo. I mean, Debo, the reason why tight wide receiver 5-6 could be weird for Debo is maybe like touchdown regression. And it's maybe like the play volume craters. I don't know if it's more about – I'm not really necessarily worried about Brandon Ayuk because I understand like the overall efficiency of the offense with Trey Lance potentially being like a really bad passer. And isn't Miami – like all that makes sense about Tyreek Hill, but it, the role you're describing is the role that Jaylen Waddle like already totally excelled in. And the role that we know Tyreek Hill is better at than anyone in the NFL is being like a downfield streaker. And we also, as we discussed earlier in the show, Tua Tagovailoa just isn't Patrick Mahomes with that role.
No,
I kind of understand the Tyreek Hill IDP is what I'm saying.
So I wanted to touch on the Mahomes factor because obviously that's like the elephant in the room. Like, okay, he's not catching passes from the best quarterback in the NFL. I know people on Twitter would push back on that and say Mahomes is not even a top 10 because he hasn't won a Super Bowl in 3 years, but which is something. We already know that Tyreek Hill can excel statistically without Mahomes because he did it with Alex Smith.
That's okay, true.
With one of the weakest arm quarterbacks in modern NFL history. I try to turn off the spreadsheet in my mind and say, this guy's really good. I just want to get him wherever I can.
It's a fair take. And Tyreek Hill, very, very good, proven good football player. Like you said, he was not a Mahomes creation.
No.
So it's going to be Tyreek versus Jaylen Waddle. I feel like it'll be kind of an interesting fantasy debate as the season goes on, and definitely Debo. Cause talk about a season. Yeah. That does not seem repeatable, but I do just think he's like a special player, but gosh, just so many different variables for the 49ers.
Who's your second player?
Second player, Denny, is Ramondre Stevenson. Oh, and I don't know. Is this me getting hype beasted? Is this me just like only reading summer headlines? Is this me having him in my dynasty league and being obsessed with him and having a vested interest in him taking a step forward this year? It's tough to say. But I feel like the ADP just stayed reasonable, really. He's still going. He's like the RB30. And it's just like a no-brainer shot for me to take. And sometimes I will admit I've ended up with him as my RB2, which is not ideal. You don't really want that. I mean, it could work. But Ramondre Stevenson, like if he's available to you as an RB3, and like the range of, say, Chase Edmonds, Kareem Hunt, Tony Pollard, maybe Devin Singletary, maybe Rashad Penny, or even like Damian Pierce, I just feel like it's like a no-brainer where a guy who can make plays in seemingly every phase, you know, the Patriots were supposedly going to involve Ty Montgomery. Now he's got a major ankle injury. And just Stevenson's ADP stayed more reasonable than I was expecting, and I just cannot stop taking him as my RB3 and sometimes even my RB2.
We can definitely agree here, and I relate completely with everything you just said. And I'm not looking forward to the week, maybe it'll be week one even, when Damian Harris trips into the end zone twice. People on Twitter will say,
we will have to endure that because it is going to happen.
Ramondre Stevenson is the backup and Damian Harris is. So I'm not looking forward to that, but I am looking forward to Stevenson, I think, taking on a bigger role. Bill Belichick said 2 weeks ago, he said it's going to come down to these two guys. And this is, by the way, before the Ty Montgomery injury. He said this. So Montgomery's injury is probably long-term-ish, okay? He's not going to be back early in the season. He was carted off when he suffered the injury. Stevenson had a pretty good pass-catching profile in college. He, on his very limited opportunities as a rookie in New England, he did really well as a pass catcher. So I am in, especially, you know, PPR wise, I'm in on Stevenson at where he's going. In fact, he's like essential to the way I put together teams.
Me too, basically. And just the key is that his ADP didn't go crazy, especially in like home leagues, normal people leagues, quote unquote. And you will have to be ready, but there will be weeks where he will be the backup. And sure, it could be like several weeks to even begin the season. You just will have to be ready for that. You're basically betting on a talented playmaker getting at least 12 to 15 touches a game and maybe more, and maybe becoming like a full blown pass catcher. It is admittedly taking a shot. It's not taking a sure thing. It's kind of like connecting dots. You know, a player who was 100% rostered down the stretch last season was a pretty safe flex down the stretch. So too, it's not like we're like concocting the story like out of thin air.
No, no,
there is still some dot connecting involved.
The team likes it. I mean, let's review. Belichick said, Stevenson has improved as a pass catcher and, importantly, as a pass blocker, which is why he was deactivated. He was in street clothes for 3 weeks last fall, okay, because he missed one block. So that's important. It's a really critical development. I want to say that the Patriots' strength of schedule, per Sharp Football Analysis, is the seventh toughest in the entire league. I think that speaks positively for Stevenson over Harris, because we're talking about, as of this recording, a miserable, down bad New England offense that may have to be throwing a lot more than they want to.
And just real quick, circling back to the Bill Belichick praise, as we've discussed extensively on the show, he never, ever praises his own players. He only praises players who intercept Tom Brady.
And, that's true.
Never, and so it's pretty notable when he praises one of his own players. Denny, yeah. Who is the third player that you keep drafting?
I'll get to him in just a moment. We'll talk maybe a little more about him when we talk about the article that I wrote 8 months ago. But Michael Pittman.
We'll talk about Michael Pittman then for the next one. My third one, I mean, beyond like flyer types where I keep drafting Josh Palmer over and over again, Keenan Allen is aging. I just don't believe in Michael Williams. I still just believe Michael Williams is best suited to be like a role-playing number two deep threat, a very good role-playing number two deep threat. But I think like the target commander that he was at times last season just isn't really who he is. And, you know, he's kind of injury prone.
Why are you being so formal? Why are you calling him Michael?
Michael Williams. I like word-based humor where I think it's funny to like say someone's full name.
I don't even know if his real name is Michael. I think no, it's just Michael.
It's Michael. But I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for fading Michael Williams, by the way.
Stop saying Michael Williams.
Going to get in a lot of trouble fading Mike. I love Josh Palmer just because that offense really needed a third target. Chargers taking a lot of Paris Campbell. But player who's like actually being drafted in every league, and I wish this weren't the case. It makes me feel like a normie, like a noob. But I keep taking Dalton Schultz because he's someone whose ADP I feel like has remained very reasonable. And he's someone I feel like after him at tight end, you're just kind of like out of sure things. Like, I don't know if TJ Hockenson's a sure thing. Whoa. With his vastly increased target competition this year. I don't know if Dallas Goedert's a sure thing because it's still a run-based offense.
No, and don't say that. I have more Goedert than anybody.
It's still a run-based offense, and they've got – talk about a targets commander in A.J. Brown. It's been a very positive camp for DeVonta Smith. I just think like the story of Dallas Goedert's career could remain the same where – he's a tight end one, but like the volume just isn't quite steady enough for him to surpass someone like Dalton Schultz. You know, then it's Zach Ertz, Dawson Knox, et cetera, et cetera. The Cowboys need targets so badly. They're lacking places to send the ball right now. They've loved Dalton Schultz forever. I mean, this is the team that featured him over Blake Jarwin to break every fantasy manager's heart. And I just think no one wants to take Dalton Schultz because it's Dalton Schultz, but I've just kind of like loved getting him. And I don't know, like the seventh, eighth round. More like sixth or seventh is actually where he's going. And I like to get the safety of Dalton Schultz. I think he has a very, very high floor at tight end.
I think a high floor is the right way to put it in a Dallas offense that just doesn't have a whole lot of target competition outside of CeeDee Lamb. I see you were talking about like your last chance to get that high floor.
Yeah. Sorry. Not like the last chance to just lock in guaranteed targets.
So I see that last chance as Goddard.
I actually do understand the Goddard argument too, but there's just a lot of variables in that Eagles offense still to me.
Volume wise, I want to say Jarwin, but Blake, wait, who are we talking about?
We're talking about Dalton Schultz.
Dalton Schultz.
Blake Jarwin, he's retired. He's not an investment banker.
When we're talking about target volume, obviously Dalton Schultz has the edge there. Also, Schultz seemed to have more hype behind him, more steam, as the kids are saying, back in like June and July when sickos were drafting. But I'm pretty sure in more casual leagues, you could get Dalton Schultz in like the eighth round, which is pretty good.
They don't want to take him, understandably so, because the ceiling isn't really there, but just the floor is like unreasonably high, I feel like. And he's the number two target right now for the Cowboys. Is that actually even debatable? I feel like he's got to be considered the locked-in number two target for this offense.
Probably. I kind of wanted to say, at the moment, without Gallup, I wanted to say Tony Pollard, but you're probably right.
Yeah, it's got to be Dalton Schultz. And I don't know. I'm sorry if you're listening and very disappointed that you thought I was hipper and smarter.
No, it's a boomer pick. It's a boomer pick. It's okay.
It's boomed. Business is booming. We'll be right back real quick after this. Talk about Denny's art.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app, go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands by predicting what will happen in Major League Baseball, on the NASCAR circuit, in the Premier League, and much more. And our Sunday Night Football contest, Sunday Night 7, will return for the start of the NFL season. Download the app today for your chance to win big. See, Denny, we spend so much time talking about zero RB, hero RB, certain kind of builds, certain kind of leagues. You did an article recently on players who work in just every format, every kind of build. Mm-hmm. We won't go through all five. Let's do two or three players from your article that you just think fit every build for fantasy managers who will be drafting this weekend.
So I know this upsets folks who say just draft the best players, which
I don't
think that that's a viable strategy. I think that you need to have some way of concocting a draft that takes advantage of your league settings and your roster requirements and everything. So we'll start it off with Michael Pittman. I think Pittman, as I outlined in the piece, you can find it on NBCSportsEdge.com. Michael Pittman fits a zero RB build or a hero RB build as a wide receiver 2 or 3. I mean, it's a, you know, embarrassment of riches if you can get him as your wide receiver 3, honestly. And I think that he suffices as perhaps even a wide receiver 1 for a heavy running back build for a team that takes running back in 2 or 3 with the first 2 or 3 picks in the draft. And I say that because I truly believe the Colts offense will be, and I'm obviously not the only one, but I'm basing this on the fact that I think the Colts offense would be much more balanced, much more, you know, maybe even leaning toward the pass this year, because they have an upgrade at quarterback, because Frank Reich's comments over the past 2 or 3 weeks where he says, we don't want to do the ground and pound thing. We want to attack through the air. They have a super soft schedule. Everything and Matt Ryan has a history of peppering his number one target with targets,
except for touchdowns.
I can't worry about touchdowns. I cannot. And Pittman was fine last year. Like, you know, yards per route run and targets per route run, things of that nature. They were good. They're not great, but good catching passes from Carson freaking Wentz. So I do really like him, no matter how you build your team.
And he's got a reputation as a man coverage beater, like a guy who can kind of just like excel no matter what the looks are against him. And Matt Ryan, the touchdowns thing has always been weird. It's like kind of real, but he has supported, I mean, 5 or 6 legitimate wide receiver ones over the past 10 to 12 years, like going back to Roddy White on through Calvin Ridley. Like he peppers his best players with targets, and far and away his best receiver as Michael Pittman. He already basically broke out last year, even with Carson Wentz. He's like 95% of the way there. And I very much agree Matt Ryan's going to take him the final 5%, and probably someone who should be in the top 12 at wide receiver. He's been right on that borderline. Some drafts you will see him go in the top 12 receivers. But sometimes I find myself deciding between DJ Moore and Michael Pittman. And I've been doing a lot of both, just to be honest. And Michael Pittman, I have on a lot of teams, and totally agree with the take.
It's like the meme. Why not both?
Why not both?
And I think that works. And then just the second guy, I outlined five players here, but the second guy I want to talk about is Courtland Sutton, who I think for similar reasons can fit any kind of roster. If you go wide receiver heavy, he can be your wide receiver three, which again, I think is kind of great, kind of ridiculous. But I think he also has not only the floor, but the upside in what should be kind of a Denver offense based on, like, think of it like threes and layups, right? Like big downfield bombs. And
that is
like
Russell Wilson.
little checkdowns. And that's the way that the Russ cooking offense worked for a while in Seattle before it didn't work. And I know
we caught the stove on fire.
We discussed that ad nauseum. So if you want to listen to that, you can go find that podcast. But and
Sutton, Denny doesn't even think Russell Wilson's good, but continue.
Let's relax on that a little bit, but he's fine. He's a fine quarterback. Courtland Sutton, by all accounts, is the number one, unquestioned number one target. In fact, there was a beat reporter for Denver who said he's not sure Jerry Jeudy is the second wide receiver in that offense at the moment.
Even now? This was after Tim Patrick? Oh, my gosh.
Even now. So I'm going in on Courtland Sutton. And the any way I build my team, I think that he fits perfectly. There are other receivers around him who could also fit. But, like, if it's Michael Williams or Courtland Sutton, for me, it's not a choice. It's just Sutton.
Jerry Jeudy does not know how to win friends and influence people.
He's down bad.
I think it's just an utterly farcical. We've gotten way too people so badly just want to apply the DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, outlook to these Broncos. But Jerry Jeudy to me is a very Tyler Lockett type player, where he plays in the slot but can also make huge plays down the field. And I just find it farcical. Maybe he's just not good. I don't know. But I found the summer narrative. I'm just totally fading the summer narrative on Jerry Jeudy. But yeah, five players who fit any fantasy football roster construction is on NBC Sports Edge, powered by RotoWorld. It's an extremely good article. You talk about Cam Akers in there as well. Read it. And Dallas Goedert, apparently. I forgot about that.
That's right. But Akers injury has kind of thrown a wrench in that. But still, nevertheless,
go check it out. Check out everything on the site. We're going to have all the week's cuts up. We have all the latest news up ahead of your fantasy football drafts this weekend. Just going to be a big, big week over at RotoWorld. So go check it out. Check out our podcast on Thursday with Mr. Match Drop. Thanks for listening today. For Denny, I am Pat. We will catch you later this week.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.